The perfect combination of versatile athleisure and training apparel has arrived. Thanks to the visionary minds of New Balance, Clutch Athletics, and Rich Paul, the designs reflect the heart of the athlete and the spirit of the community. With rising defensive stars Will Anderson and Chase Young on the roster, Clutch Athletics brings the best innovative gear to all athletes, giving them style and performance on and off the field. Learn more and purchase Clutch Athletics at newbalance.com.
The all-new Hyundai 2024 Santa Fe is equipped with everything you need to break free from the dull work week and embark on an adventurous weekend with your family. The all-new Hyundai Santa Fe's features like available H-Track all-wheel drive, standard third-row seating, available dual wireless charging pads ensure you can take on any adventure. Available H-Track all-wheel drive so you can take on the dirt trails and kick up some mud. Standard third-row seating so your whole family can experience the thrill together. Available dual wireless charging pads so no one gets stuck in the great outdoors with a dead phone. Whether you're tailgating out in the dirt lot, Carter Finley, shout out Carter Finley, or whether you're whitewater rafting, taking the entire family on an adventurous trip, maybe you're out camping at Mount Rogers. I used to go as a kid. I wish my parents had a Hyundai Santa Fe. The Hyundai Santa Fe is perfect for your family outing. Learn more about the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe at HyundaiUSA.com. Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. What's up, everybody? Welcome to the Pick Six Podcast, CBS Sports Daily NFL Podcast. I'm Overton. I'm your host. It is Thursday, July 28th. If you are listening to the podcast in audio form, we are also a video podcast. We are live on YouTube frequently, almost every day at 1 o'clock, sometimes at 1:09, sometimes at 2:09, as is the case today. And if you're watching, it is Wednesday, July 27th. And joining me to talk some Pats, to talk a little Julio Jones, and then to break down the AFC South, Tyler Sullivan, a.k.a. Sully. What's up, buddy?
How are we doing? What's going on, Will? Thank you. And as you noted, we did move this a little bit because I was at Patriots training camp, so thanks for being flexible for me, bud.
Ah, I don't care. I actually did log in at 1 o'clock. I was like, oh, wait, no, it's 2. I was like, sweet.
That was when you were on time. You could just say
I was like, and I was like, I actually was like 2 minutes late. So, I was like, wait a minute. Oh, I'll be on time at 2. I was like, nah, probably not. The problem is, it's like, I think my biggest problem with like punctuality is, and I know, and like, I'm aware of this, but that didn't help me at all. Is that when I think that things take, in my brain, things take less time than they actually do.
Yeah.
Like, okay, in my brain, I can stand up out of my chair at 1:59 and like, and then I'm like, oh, I need a water. Or, you know, like, I'm like, oh, I need a hat. I need my water. And, you know, I need this. And like, the, you know, and that's, you know, but, you know, so I'm also like, oh, I can get here in 90 minutes. But in reality, you sometimes, you know what I'm saying? Like, I think that's my biggest fault. And so I recognize the fault.
I'm not going to do anything about it, but
change it per se. Right. I'm not going to alter my approach, but I am aware of what's going on. And that's at least something, right? It's like Bill Belichick. So you were at Pat's training camp.
Yep.
How's the weather up there in Boston?
Hot. I was just telling Debo, it's been hot. It's been like unseasonably hot up here, like 90 something degrees. Over the weekend it was like almost getting to 100. It was very, very hot, but it was kind of cooling down, and I checked, you know, my phone. It was gonna be like 70 something degrees this morning. I'm like, sweet, all right, I'll wear it. I'm wearing exactly what I wear, like a golf polo, and I'm wearing khaki pants. I was dying. It was really? So hot. Oh,
you're not out there, you wore pants out there?
It was unbelievable. People were like, you know, just dressed like they were going on the beach. I'm like, sweet.
I'm showing up in a polo and like a what you got to get is like an actual golf shirt.
Yes,
just wear a golf shirt out there because the sweat wicking is just so much easier. And then shorts, or you could even do what I do. Like, I don't wear, so I wear, all I wear now is golf shorts.
So they have us like up on like a little bit of a hill, right overlooking the practice fields. The veteran move was our buddy Tom Curran. He had like a beach chair going. He was locked and loaded. I'm like,
Tom doesn't play around, man.
That's a guy who knows, who's been there once or twice.
Yeah. I mean, how many times has he been to that?
It was cool.
Yeah, so that's cool. I got a couple specific questions about Patriots camp.
Yep.
I don't want to belabor this point, but I do want to ask about it because I heard Matt, I saw a quote from Mac Jones essentially saying that Bill Belichick, Matt Patricia, and Joe Judge have all been very involved in the offense, and that Bill has a plan for the, or I can't remember what the exact word was, but Bill has a plan for the offense, and that let's see if I can find it really quick, and that also that it's a simpler offense. So I'm just curious, like what were your main takeaways? Because again, we mentioned this a lot during, you know, on Monday. I think we talked about it for like 20 minutes. What was your main takeaway from sort of the various people involved in the offense had to say about it?
Yeah, and so let me break it down for you like this. When they got on the field and they started, you know, camp is started. Everybody's stretching on one side. The quarterbacks are warming up on the right side. You had Joe Judge lurking around where the quarterbacks were warming up, you know, working on footwork, throwing, and all that stuff. Joe Judge was firmly in that mix there talking with Mac Jones, Zappe, Brian Hoyer, all those guys. And then eventually, once they started getting the team drills, you did have a very, you know, present Bill Belichick on the offensive side. And then when you got a little bit more to the competitive stuff, Matt Patricia was wearing a walkie, or was using like a walkie-talkie, seemingly talking to Mac Jones in his helmet, calling plays. So from how we see this, it looks like Mac Patricia, with a heavy dose of Bill Belichick kind of lurking over things, mm-hmm. was calling the plays while Joe Judge was the quarterback's coach, if you kind of, you know, work its way down that way. And so Mac Jones did talk about it, saying that, you know, it doesn't really matter who's talking, they all come with different voices, but it's kind of all, you know, it's just they all got a good rhythm to how they're presenting the offense, and it's a united type of thing. So it did feel like there was some cohesiveness. Again, day one, first practice, no pads, no contact or anything like that. But it did seem like it was a little bit more streamlined, where it was Bill Belichick having a heavier hand, or at least a heavier eye on the offensive side. Matt Patricia calling plays seemingly, and then Joe Judge specifically working with the quarterbacks.
Okay. So I like that. I don't know if I'm going to be right about this offense or not, but that was sort of what I thought might be happening. It's like Belichick is going to, he's like, crap, I haven't had another offensive, I haven't had somebody else running my offense in a decade?
Yeah, long time.
Yeah, so I mean, maybe a little bit less, but whatever. It's been a long time since, it's actually probably about, I mean, close to 10 years, right? Because McDaniels, I think, it's been close to 10 years. And I think he is worried about the idea of Matt Patricia running an offense. I think he thinks Matt Patricia can successfully call pretty scripted plays. I also think that when you hear Mac Jones say that the offense is simplified, it's going to be faster, going to be simplified. I think it's simplified for Matt Patricia. I don't think it's simplified for Mac Jones.
Yeah, it's possible. Again, you know, Kendrick Bourne was talking about it. Trent Brown was also talking about it, a simpler offense. They were talking about it with a little bit more emphasis on speed, you know, just trying to have a faster offense right from the jump, getting to the line, getting off the line, all that stuff. So, and that was a big, you know, flaw of the 2021 Patriots. They just weren't fast enough. That was personnel and everything. There was a number of times there where, you know, Mac Jones, the play clock's running down during his rookie year, and he's kind of having those rookie growing pains where the clock runs out. You're either taking that penalty or calling a timeout and kind of, you know, burning one of those. So I think it's kind of a combination of all of that. Getting faster is just a general theme of the offense, but there is absolutely something to, you know, you can't run this, you know, Julian Edelman is called, you know, advanced calculus at some points during his career, the Patriots offense. You can't really do that when you have a second year quarterback and a first time offensive play caller, right, whether that be Matt Patricia or Joe Judge.
Yeah. And I mean, like, Matt Patricia has been a defensive coordinator his whole life. It would be a weird thing. Talk to me about Ramondre Stevenson and Damian Harris. I think I saw something where Stevenson might've even been with the ones and was getting a lot of pass catching action, which I think is certainly interesting for fantasy folks and anyone who's looking to gamble on some season long props.
Yeah, no, I mean, I think again, it's again, first day and all that, you're getting all those guys in pass catching routes. It's not necessarily anything crazy. And for running back specifically, next week's really the week. You're talking about legitimately, you know, you're playing flag football right now. It's not necessarily what you're going to see. To me, the bigger takeaway in terms of like fantasy, if you want to like look at something along those lines, was it was a good day for Devontae Parker, a really good day for Devontae Parker. He had a couple of really nice end zone catches from Mac Jones with coverage. That he had a big day. That to me, he was the standout. He was getting the crowd fired up. Like it was a very interesting introduction there for Devontae Parker. A bigger body, clearly he just looked like the biggest guy in that receiver room. And he was clearly a red zone threat. When they were doing those red zone plays in the more competitive kind of sessions, he was a huge factor. I think he had a touchdown over, I think it was Jalen Mills and Jack Jones, the rookie.
Yeah.
So he had a couple of big plays there, and it was from Mac Jones. It wasn't like Brian Hoyer was slinging it to him. There was some quick chemistry between those two. So that one.
That's huge for them.
If we're talking like fantasy sleeper, day one type of stuff, Devontae Parker was a winner.
Okay. Interesting. How did my boy Jacoby Myers look?
Good. Same old, same old. Yeah. You know, again,
very reliable.
Right. You're running routes against, you know,
air.
Random in the air. Right? There are competitive sessions and all of that. He might have got a touchdown, but to me, Parker was the one.
Parker stood out more than okay. Yeah. I mean, that's interesting because he was such a cheap acquisition this offseason.
Yeah.
Like, they just haven't. I mean, Jacoby's been great, but they haven't really had. You know, Mac Jones needs a potential stud to grow with. And Devontae Parker, I mean, was a former first round pick. Like,
yeah. I mean, you know, if he can stay healthy, he can maybe be that big body guy in the red zone that they've been looking for. So, I mean, like that was an encouraging first step for him. Again, you know, we're still figuring it, you know, it's still all very, very new. But to me, you know, the takeaway from the offensive side, you know, in terms of the skill positions, it was Devontae Parker.
Okay. Any other takeaways?
I'm sure
you have a write up for.
I'm in the process of doing it, so we'll have a observations, and then I'll have a
right now. If you didn't have to do this podcast,
yeah, but I like doing. I like talking to you, so this is easier. And so we have on the offensive side.
You could also be like, "Hey, sorry, I have to do the podcast. I can't right. Turn this around right away."
Exactly. The other big takeaway on the offensive side, it was something that we touched upon when we did the AFC East preview during this. And we, you know, those burning questions for training camp. Mm-hmm. What was the tackle situation going to look like? Was it going to be Trent Brown as the left tackle like we saw earlier in the spring? Or was Isaiah Wynn going to go back to that familiar spot that he played last year and basically has been that left tackle guy ever since he's been drafted when he's healthy? And it's stayed the same. Trent Brown was the left tackle and Isaiah Wynn was on the right side. That seems like that's going to, you know, stay the same. I don't think that this is a building for depth and building versatility thing. I think that Trent Brown right now is the left tackle. He said, you know, it feels familiar. It feels like home, I think he said, you know, to quote him, you know, to paraphrase what he said. So, you know, that's a significant change. He's obviously been the left tackle for the New England Patriots before when they won that Super Bowl against the Rams. So it's not like it's, you know, a complete change, but you know, a notable one there, especially when you have a first round pick, you know, that was earmarked to be that left tackle and now moving to right tackle.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, that's definitely a big deal. Okay. Julio Jones signed with the Buccaneers. I think we actually mentioned it at the back end of yesterday's podcast. A scale of 1 to 10, how does that move the needle for you?
I think it's, you know, it's however much Odell Beckham moved.
Oh, okay. So more than that. All right.
So however much Odell Beckham moved it, I guess, you know, you're adding on to already a Super Bowl contender. But if you get Julio Jones from like 2019, you're talking about maybe like Antonio Brown 2.0, where it's like, okay, this guy's just fantastic. And we have this unbelievable weapon. It's depth for obviously Chris Godwin coming back from the torn ACL. He's not on PUP. So at least that's, you know, positive signs all around for the Buccaneers wide receiver room. But if you get Julio Jones, not obviously prime, you know, Atlanta Falcons Julio Jones, but that last year in Atlanta, you're talking
next
about
last year, next to last year. 2020 was bad for Julio in Atlanta, but
okay, so yeah, 2019 is what I'm saying.
He only played 2019, he had 13,
yeah,
400 yards and 6 touchdowns. Yeah, I mean,
even if you get 85% of that, you're thrilled about what you're getting. So, and again, just makes Tom Brady an absolute, you know, weapon for fantasy, possible, you know, top, you know, clear top 10 guy, top 5 quarterback. So for me, you know, it just makes him that much deeper.
I just can't stop thinking about how like miserable he was in Tennessee last year. Like maybe hated it. I mean, he was he didn't play in 7 games. I guess he did have one big game early on in the season against Tennessee. It's 6 catches for 128 yards. I kind of forgot about that.
You know, it's going to be one of those things, though, with Julio, too. How long is he actually going to be on the field for him? You know what I mean? Durability's a major concern. So
absolutely
sounds great. It's kind of like a Madden, you know, everybody's loading up and you're just, you know, you're creating this fantasy team at the wide receiver position, but you know, let's see how long this actually lasts. And yes, Mike Evans, Chris Godwin, and Julio Jones sound fantastic, but one's coming off an ACL. The other one in Julio Jones is a veteran that's really struggled over the last few years and struggled to stay healthy for a large part of his career too.
And also, we should also point out that the 49ers, I think maybe I even said this at the end of yesterday's podcast too. So again, I'm sorry if I did. We, you know, we do a lot of podcasts, a lot of news. I'm not apologizing to you. I'm apologizing to listeners. 49ers committed to Trey Lance and said that they're, you know, they're not, Jimmy G's not going on the PUP. He passed his physical, which like, yeah, they're trying to trade him. Of course he passes physical. He could have like, his leg could be dangling off to the side. They're like, yeah, Jimmy's great. He's great. Good to go. Do you think it's a smart play by the Niners here? I'm a little surprised. I thought they might be a little more, I think it's smart to commit to Trey Lance. I thought they might try to sort of have their cake and eat it too with Jimmy as a possible backup, but clearly they want to try to move on.
Yeah, no, I think you kind of have to cut the cord at this point, you know, where it's like, listen, we're not trying, like, because I think that there was a conversation when obviously Garoppolo was injured and, you know, that derails any sort of trade talks over the offseason a little bit. But there was that like, well, is Trey Lance any good? They still have Jimmy Garoppolo. They're hanging on to him for reasons other than that they can't trade him. Does Trey Lance stink and we don't know? This is a very clear-cut sign. We're not turning back. This is our guy. We're very confident in what he is going to be. It's just we have this other quarterback that we're still trying to figure out, but we're very much saying it's totally different, it's totally
Trey's
separate.
Trey is the guy. This is Trey's team.
Which is fine.
Yeah, I think you have. Yeah, you don't want to sow any doubt going to training camp with Trey Lance.
Right, and if you're trying to like, you know, screw around to try to raise his value and anything like that, I think you're asking for more trouble than anything else, because Trey Lance already has a ton of pressure on him. He's replacing a guy when healthy can take a team to a Super Bowl, and this franchise just traded a boatload of assets to acquire this guy and move off of that quarterback. So, you know, you have to make it a clean break. And if you're talking about Garoppolo's future, you know, we are rocketing towards, are they just going to cut him? Because I don't know.
That's what I was about to say. It's like I think they basically said they're going to cut him if he's still on the team. Like we're heading into week one, because they free up $24 million in salary cap space.
And I think everybody in the league, I think that's one of these things. Everybody in the league knows that. They don't have to give up any assets. Seattle can just kind of wait there and say, all right, well, we'll figure it out. And, you know, in the meantime.
Yeah, everybody can sit there and wait. And you know, it ends up to Jimmy where he wants to sign. And maybe it's Seattle where he gets revenge against the 49ers. But, yeah, it's a good point. All right, let's take a break. When we come back, we'll answer AFC South burning training camp questions next.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
We start with the division favorite in the AFC South, the Indianapolis Colts. Cody Benjamin penned this piece. That's okay. We'll, and unlike, I don't want to name any names, but unlike Jordan Dejani, Cody, just kidding, we love Dejani. But Dejani, like yesterday, I was like trying to like fashion, like Cody asked three questions for each team. Dejani like had three, like three things, which is totally fine. It's just not a, it's not a question.
It's not a burning question. It's a burning statement.
It's no, but it'd be like, instead of phrasing it as like, who's playing left guard? It'd be like, the left guard. This is, it's just like, you just don't get credit for answering it. Like on Jeopardy, basically.
It's that too, but it's also like when Dwight and Jim throw the birthday, it is your birthday. It's very out there.
Yeah. Well, it's like,
it's a statement of fact.
Yeah. Left tackle. It's just left guard is an issue. And there's nothing wrong with that. First question here. How much does Matt Ryan have left? I think that's a fair, good first question. Matt Ryan, they traded for Matt Ryan this offseason, and people are, we talk about Julio Jones, like, that 2020 season with the Falcons. I mean, the Falcons haven't been good for several years. So as such, people, and I think you and I talked about this too, maybe, but people don't like Matt Ryan.
Yeah, there's a little something there, whatever it is.
Nobody gets excited about Matt Ryan.
It's he's very old school in his sense. Statue quarterback.
He's very vanilla.
Yeah.
Has had, obviously had his, he won the Offensive Rookie of the Year and won MVP, but it's only been to like four Pro Bowls, one all-pro team. He's just never been like a top three quarter. He's never been, I guess he was a top three quarterback when he won the MVP, obviously. But you know what I'm saying? Like even then, it's, you have Tom Brady beats, there was never a chance of him like cracking the upper echelon of guys that we talk about, like a Matt Ryan. I mean, like a Tom Brady, Aaron Rodgers.
You can say it like this: even with his MVP season, you can even count it. Then he's never been the first pick when you ask the question, "I'm going to start a franchise. Which quarterback am I picking?" He's never really been. He's never been that guy. Right. And I think that's kind of what we're getting at.
Yeah, I mean, the MVP season feels like the outlier more. And so I think people are more down on Matt Ryan than they should be. He still completed 67% of his passes last year for almost 4,000 yards. First time he didn't crack 4,000 yards since 2010, by the way. And, doing a 7-10 team, they've been below 500 for the last 4 years. And when that happens, you tend to slide a little bit more into obscurity. Yes, he is 37. I still think he has two good seasons left in the tank. And so I'm a little bit higher on Matt Ryan, but I mean, I think the question is very much worth asking, because if he doesn't have a lot left in the tank, it's going to be tough for the Colts this year.
Well, I think we look at it kind of with a little bit of like recency bias, where it's like, oh, veteran quarterback is changing sceneries. He's going to be great. It's Tom Brady. It's Matthew Stafford. It's Russell Wilson in Denver. Like, I think we're looking at it kind of like that and saying, okay, we're looking at the ceiling. Yeah, there's a scenario where he just kind of looks a little past his prime, looks a little old. Maybe he doesn't reach the heights that we think. But at the same time, we're not asking him to be the Matt Ryan, prime Matt Ryan. We're honestly just asking him to be better than Carson Wentz was last year, because anything better than him
in week 18 basically
makes the playoffs. Like, so, there's part of that too. You don't necessarily have to reach your ceiling. You kind of just don't have to hit the floor that they reached last year at the position. But if the bottom does kind of fall out, it will be fascinating to see kind of how the Colts operate. Cause you're talking about now like doing this retread quarterback thing for another year. Are you going to be a Jimmy Garoppolo team next offseason? Are you going to be a Baker Mayfield
signed team? Jimmy G this season?
Is that something that you pallet just to kind of be that next, trying to fix that quarterback, the land of misfit quarterbacks or something like that? Like, sure, you could try it, see if it works. Or do you say, okay, now let's do it for real. Let's try to find a quarterback in the draft. That'll be fascinating to see if the bottom falls off. That's the route that they take.
I agreed completely. Which offensive line is going to show up? Interesting. The Colts were not as good last year. They've still got elite names, but are they still reliable is what Cody is wondering. I say that the good offensive line shows up.
Yeah, I think so too. I think better quarterback play, strong running game. I think that all kind of, helps itself. I mean, listen, if Carson Wentz is holding the ball a little bit too long, is, making poor plays, it's going to make everybody look bad.
I was going to get the exact same thing. What do you think? Do you think that the Colts magically just sucked on the offensive line? Or do you think that it's like Carson, because like Jonathan Taylor ran the ball fine. They ran the ball well. If their pass protection just suddenly wasn't very good.
If Wentz misses his first read and holds the ball too long and gets sacked, is it the offensive line's fault or is it Wentz's fault?
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's correct. It is Carson Wentz's fault, but the offensive line catches more flack for it. So yeah, for sure. I tend to agree that the good Colts offensive line shows up. Is there really enough out wide? Now, this is a good question.
Yeah, for sure.
Basically wondering about the Colts wide receivers. They don't even have T.Y. Hilton on the roster.
No. I think there was something with T.Y. Hilton. Let me look it up really quick. I was about to say something, but I don't know if that's at all accurate.
Michael Pittman is still their one. Alec Pierce, they added as a second-round pick, and they have Paris Campbell, who their former second-round pick in 2019, who just really never developed despite being just an awesome player in college. Ashton Doolin, they like a lot, and they picked up Isaiah Ford and Kike Kute this offseason. They drafted some other young guys. They have Malachi Cox at tight end. But yeah, I mean, out wide, there is not a lot. Like, it's Pittman. I would say there's not enough out wide. But I think it's possible that there is enough given what they want to do on offense.
Sure. And what we were saying about T.Y. Hilton, he's, quote unquote, still in the mix to return the Colts. So, you know, leave that out for whatever that's worth. But yeah, no, I mean, for me, you know, it's Pittman and then there's a lot of question marks. Alec Pierce and Paris Campbell, you know, Paris Campbell in particular hasn't been able to really stay healthy and be much of a factor. Well, he was a first round pick, right?
Or I think he was a first round pick too, but it's Arlads has him as a second round pick. Let me double check.
Yeah, maybe.
No, because they would have taken. No, he was. They took. I thought he was a second round pick.
Interesting.
Yeah, interesting.
But you know, again, someone who came in.
He was it's the famous 2019 wide receiver draft. He was taking two picks after JJ Arcega-Whiteside. 230. Devour's that next call. That means he probably heard me talking about JJ, but he didn't actually hear it. Anyway, go ahead, keep going, Tori.
No, and so I was just saying that it was, you know, again, hasn't been able to stay healthy, a highly drafted player. You would think that would be someone who you could continue to build around, but it just hasn't happened yet. I'm surprised that this wasn't a Julio Jones team, to be perfectly honest. I mean, we've talked about it. You know, Matt Ryan, Julio Jones, meeting back up in Indianapolis makes all the sense in the world.
I know.
It just never seemed to, you know, fit. Maybe they're, you know, maybe this is an Odell Beckham team. Maybe this is when he gets healthy, the Colts realize, all right, you know, we don't really have enough here. Let's go out and get somebody. And if he wants to wait till he's full, you know, Odell Beckham, if he wants to wait till he's fully healthy and kind of gauge his market to see where the winds are blowing in terms of the standings and what gives him another shot at a ring, you know, Indianapolis might be one of those teams that could be in contention.
I also think, and again, like just going back to it, like Carson Wentz last year, 516 passing attempts, Phillip Rivers, 543 the year before, and Rivers Jacoby Brissett in 2019, 447. Like, even if you go back and look at 2018 with Andrew Luck, I mean, he had 639, but I mean, it's by and large, it is Colts. If Frank Reich doesn't want to try to cut things loose, you know, he's known Phillip Rivers forever. You can tell, like, he didn't want to have this, this team that just, you know, like he wants to run the football, trust his defense and have, you know, and just have his quarterback make smart decisions. So I think there's a very good chance that he's okay having minimal wide receiver. Like, you have Michael Pittman as your true one. Taylor and Nyheim Hines catch plenty of passes.
Yep.
And then you have, you know, you can kind of rotate some guys through on the outside, and you're hoping that Paris Campbell can still pop, even though certainly, yeah, I agree with you. At this point, like, you'd love to try to build around it, but it's asking a lot.
Well, the biggest thing is, and again, you know, the Buccaneers, I mean, I think Todd Bowles even said this. We added Julio Jones for depth. We'd rather add it now and have him have experience in the offense than later. What happens if Michael Pittman gets hurt? What are you looking at?
Yeah.
You know, it's so
you go sign JJ. That's what happens.
Like, you know, you're in a tough spot there. So depth wise, experience wise, ceiling, you're kind of in a tough spot.
Oh no, I agree completely. Like, I would like more on my roster, but like, it's almost like the Titans last year. And I know they added Julio, but they had AJ Brown. It's like, man, they really don't have much, but it's like, they do run the ball so much that they can kind of get away with it. Just sort of the style of play that they have. All right, moving on. the Tennessee Titans. Is Derrick Henry capable of carrying the load again? Can we get back to prime Derrick Henry? Sully, what do you think?
I mean, it's certainly possible. I mean, the guy's, you know, he's a freak, you know, so it's like, all right, you know, this last year was the, you know, we've often questioned this question or the, can he continue to carry this workload? And when is he going to get injured? And is that going to be the moment where things start to go a little sideways in terms of him being the focal point of the offense? Missed time last year, was able to come back, you know, in kind of a freakish amount of time. He was able to play in that playoff loss to the Bengals. So, you know, it's not out of the realm of possibility that, you know, he's able to still be that guy and run the offense through him. But I almost do wonder if that's the best course of action. Like, do you really need to have him have 25, 30 carries in week three against the Texans?
Right.
Like, you know, I don't know if we necessarily need that. I think that they need to try to win in different ways. If all of a sudden you start getting in those throwing matches with the Cincinnati Bengals or the Chiefs or the Bills, Derrick Henry's not going to do much for you. I mean, yeah, he can run for 200 yards, but when Josh Allen and Mahomes are throwing it all over the yard, I don't know if that's the best course of action. So for me, again, I think it can be that way, but I think that they should continue to try to find other ways to win with Ryan Tannehill throwing the football more.
And you go back and look at last year, you know, you point out that you don't need to have the early, I mean, he had 35 carries in week two against Seattle.
Like, why?
Yeah. Before he got hurt, he was averaging 27.4 rushing attempts per game.
There's no doubt that he can do it and he can do it well. It's just, do you really need it then? Do you need him to do that right there? Or can, if you don't trust Ryan Tannehill to win you those games, then we have a bigger problem than if can Derrick Henry lead the offense.
Yeah, I mean, I'm even looking like he played against Jacksonville, they win 37-19 and you have 29 carries for 130 yards. Like, just why? How about 20? He's such a freak of nature that they've never shown any inclination to like easing back his workload. And of course he did come back and, you know, play against Cincinnati, have 20 carries for 62 yards, but that's not very effective, you know, in a playoff game. Granted, against a good defense, but yeah, like, of course he can carry the load. We just need to see a little more like load management here.
Yeah.
Or an NBA term. I mean, there's just no reason for him to be carrying the ball that many times, especially early in the season. And when you know that, you know, you want to lean on him late down the stretch, I'm with you there. Next up, does Ryan Tannehill have adequate weaponry?
I would say no. I don't think so, because he's not a quarterback that is considered to be someone who can elevate the rest of the roster. He's not an elite guy that you say, okay, we have a bunch of B's and B's and C's at the skill positions, but because we have this guy under center, he's going to make them B pluses, A minuses, B's. He's going to change all of that and how teams kind of view us. He's not that quarterback. And so when you have a rookie wide receiver in Treylon Burks, who's kind of, you know, been off and on this offseason because of asthma issues, I think is what was the kind of thing that was keeping him off. Robert Woods coming off a torn ACL that's making his transition to a new team. Like we were just talking about with Derrick Henry, he was coming off an injury season. We don't want him to have that crazy workload. Right. The tight end position, it's not like Jonnu Smith is there and he's what he was in Tennessee. It's Anthony Firkser, I think, still, if that's correct. I don't see that being enough.
Yeah, they actually added Austin Hooper.
Okay, but even – okay, fine. But even still.
I mean,
it's not like they added, like, Gronkowski or Kelsey or something like that.
Prime Gronk. Like,
right.
Yeah.
I still don't think that that's enough to compete with what we're looking at in the AFC now. I mean, it's a much more competitive AFC. All these teams that missed the playoffs, the Chargers, the Ravens – you know, who else am I missing? There's one more team that's obvious, but whatever. All of the Broncos, that was one.
Yeah.
You know, those teams are going to now be in the mix, and all of those teams can throw it around the yard or have a dynamic quarterback that can win them games. I don't know if Tannehill, with the collection that they have right now, is able to do that.
Yeah. I mean, it's like Treylon Burks is somebody who's going, like, being drafted high in fantasy because of like the opportunity
target volume,
pure target volume. Yeah. It's not because it's like, he's a monster, like a prospect. I mean, some people even said he like might be more of a tight end or maybe even play tight end at one point. I love Robert Woods, well, Bobby Trees, but you know, he's coming off an injury and you know, he is not, you know, he's like, I just don't see it. Like trading AJ Brown to me was insane. I mean, yeah. AJ Brown was a monster in this offense and fit with what they wanted to do so well. Cause he doesn't need a ton of target. Like it's not like he's efficient. He's just explosive with a lower number of targets. And so I think this is a good question about
that. It was a head scratcher because, you know, you got to pay the wide receiver. The wide receiver position is just, it's that position right now that's booming. You got to pay it. Yeah. You have a guy that's proven in your system that can be a legit number one guy. I even would say still draft Burks, and you're cutting probably Tannehill next offseason anyways, which means you have a rookie quarterback. So it's who cares if you're paying your wide receiver $100 million.
I know. It's like, sure, move on from Tannehill and go with Malik Willis and keep AJ Brown. Like, you know, finally with the Titans, is there enough at cornerback? And we look here, you know, you got Caleb Farley, who didn't play much. Did he play like one game last year, maybe two games? He didn't play much at all. Christian Fulton, both guys, you know, Farley was the first round pick in 2021. Fulton, the second round pick in 2022. They added Roger McCreary in the second round this year as well. It's not the deepest position, but and it's not the healthiest position. And I think that's probably the biggest concern. They also have Elijah Molden as their nickelback and Shaheen Carter, who they grabbed. There's some talent there and there's some high draft picks, but like if Farley doesn't stay healthy, I don't know if you got a whole lot there. It seems like this team could, and that's the other thing. So you talk about what if the team ends up in shootouts.
Yeah.
Like, if you can't stop passes, pass defense, you know, if you can't stop pass attacks, then you're going to need to be able to pass. And
what you're going to be banking on is obviously, you know, Kevin Byard just, you know, being that steward in the secondary and really kind of helping things out at the safety spot. But also you're going to need your pass rush to have a successful season. I mean, that's why you're re-signing Harold Landry. You have Jeffrey Simmons. Like this is what you bring them in for, to make life a little bit easier for you. Cause again, if the quarterback has all day to throw, he's going to find the weak link in the secondary, especially if you might have two weak links at the corner positions. But if you're able to get after him and you have some help in the secondary with Byard, you're able to kind of maybe hide it a little bit better than usual.
Yeah. It's definitely a point of concern for the Titans. I think that when you look at this roster across the board. All right, let's move on to the Jacksonville Jaguars, where the top burning question, what is expected of Trevor Lawrence? I am kind of shocked at how down people are on Trevor Lawrence. Like people are like, I mean, this guy sucks. I can't believe he was the best prospect since Luck and Manning and Elway. And it's like, and I understand it. Like, he wasn't very good last year, but that team was so dysfunctional and stupid and terrible and bad. And then you see, like, he would, every game he would have a couple throws where you're like, there it is. Like, I think he's gonna be fine.
How much do you put that on the logo on the side of his helmet? Just people looking at it and being like, the Jaguars, they screwed it up. Like, you know, I do think that there's a little bit of that. Like if he was wearing a Steelers helmet, you're like, they'll figure it out. He'll be fine.
It's also right. It's like Urban Meyer. It's like if Urban Meyer coached the Patriots for like 1 year because Belichick was on a fishing hiatus or something. I'm just trying to think of something. And like they had Trevor Lawrence and he screwed him up. And then it was like Belichick's back and it's like, get Trevor Lawrence. You're like, all right, he's going to be fine.
Yeah.
You know, like,
I think that, you know, there's obviously the coaching standpoint. Now that you bring in Doug Peterson, he's a baseline average head coach, I think that's going to do wonders. I mean, wasn't there even, I mean, you know, people, you know, freak out about training camp stuff, no doubt. But I think that there was a report on Tuesday where he's like, he didn't miss a throw or something like that. He's still good.
That year didn't break him.
No. No, I don't think so. And so what do we expect from him, you know, going into this year? Like, I don't, you know, the MVP or anything like that, like, obviously not. But can you show us a little bit of that, you know, those flashes that we saw, the couple of those throws? Can we get that for a game? Can we get that for, a series? Can we get that?
I think we need to get it for like a couple of weeks in a row.
Right. Can you surprise, you know, all of a sudden it's like, oh, hey, you know, Cincinnati went down to Jacksonville and they lost. It's like, whoa, what happened? Like, you know, something like that where, and it's because of Trevor Lawrence. Can you lift your team to victory? It's the exact thing that I was saying about Ryan Tannehill. Can you make all of the weapons around you better? Can you elevate? I don't think Tannehill can do that, but I think the promise of Trevor Lawrence is that he'll be able to do that. And so can you make that Christian Kirk signing that everybody's like, really? You spend all that money? Can you say, oh, actually, he's a, you know, top 20 receiver right now or top 15 receiver?
So, like, I think that what you want from Trevor Lawrence is that at the end of the season, when people are talking about who you start a franchise with, he's a top five guy.
Yep.
Which is not to say that he doesn't have to be a top 10 quarterback this year. But it's like, you know, right now it's Mahomes, Allen, well, maybe top seven guy, I'll say.
Burrow, Herbert.
I don't know who is, like, who's after those guys. I mean, it's not Mac Jones, right? It's not Kyler Murray. I'll tell you that much.
No, probably, I mean, Lamar? Sure. Yeah. Lamar, I mean,
yeah.
I would.
Yeah, I would too. Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, like, I don't expect him to. So maybe top five is the wrong answer there, but I think
If you're in that conversation.
Yeah.
Like, believe, like right now, I think people would do it, but you're just banking on the talent and the pedigree of coming out of college. If there is legitimate NFL experience that you can point to say, hey, no, listen, I'm choosing this guy and I feel really good about it, then I think you're onto something.
I think right now, I mean, most people would, I think the average person might take like Mac Jones over Trevor Lawrence if you're starting a franchise. I don't know.
It's possible. I mean, that would be very recency bias.
Well, for sure. But I mean, like, when I say average person, I don't know. I mean, I think he needs to be in that conversation of like, all right, well, like if this guy, if he takes another step forward, then, you know, he's might be a top, you know, I might, you know, top three guy I start a franchise with. Well, how will Travis Etienne be used? Excellent question.
This is what's interesting to me about Travis Etienne. I know that he was a, you know, really valuable weapon for Lawrence in the past, his passing game and all that stuff at Clemson. And, you know, we look at him as a factor in that regard, too. But I almost do, like, I remember this time last offseason, everybody was making headlines because, like, Urban Meyer was saying, yep, we're going to put him in the slot. We're going to move him over here. We're going to move him over there. And it kind of gets everybody wild. We've kind of come to realize that Urban Meyer didn't really know what he was doing. So, like, let's pump the brakes on how much I think he's going to be a factor in those roles. He could just be a traditional running back with you know, pass-catching roles, like a James White and all that stuff. I don't know if we're moving him around like Debo Samuel or anything like that. I think he's just going to be used in more traditional roles.
Yeah, I would expect that Doug Peterson, like, he's going to catch passes out of the backfield.
For sure.
I think Doug Peterson will line him up and move him around, but he's not going to be this Percy. He's not going to be the Percy Harvin.
Exactly. Because, like, last offseason, they were talking about him, like, exclusively practicing with a wide receiver.
It's like a slot wide receiver, yeah.
I don't know if it, sometimes, for sure, that'll happen.
My theory was that he may have hurt his foot because he was exclusively, like, trying new things. He's like, all right, you're gonna have to play this. And, like, all of a sudden, it's completely changed. So, yeah, I mean, I think Doug Peterson will – if you look at his history, man, I mean, Travis Etienne's not going to be his workhorse.
Yeah.
He's going to have a variety of backs utilized, and he's going to, you know, get Travis Etienne out in space, get him catching swing passes, make life easier for Trevor Lawrence, you know, he'll slide him around, but I mean,
exactly. I totally agree with what you're saying. It's not like, let me clarify what I'm saying, I guess, a little bit. I think you're going to see a traditional kind of running back like that, where it's, you know, catching passes out of the backfield and all this stuff. I don't think it's going to be kind of what I feel like Urban Meyer was previewing last year, where it's like, we're just going to use him in a totally different way. He's going to be practicing with wide receivers. I think you're going to just see a traditional pass catching running back, which again is great for Trevor Lawrence because they already have chemistry from Clemson.
And finally, for the Jaguars, what's the plan for the new defensive toys? Mike Caldwell, as Cody points out, is a first-time defensive coordinator, and he's got Trayvon Walker, Devin Lloyd, Foye Loken. Who else did he grab? Who else did they add on defense? Are we forgetting somebody?
I think we're forgetting a free agent addition.
Yeah, because those toys, those are fine toys, but there's, you know. Maybe it means new toys for Doug Peterson and I'm trying to think who else they added. Rashawn Jenkins, maybe? Shaq Griffin?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Oh, Fatuski. I can never pronounce his name right. Anyway, they added a they had a lot of new defensive pieces, and they also have Josh Allen there. I mean, they got some players.
Yeah,
like it'll be curious to see if the defense can be any good, especially under a first year defensive coordinator. The Trayvon Walker thing is interesting too, because you know you had Aiden Hutchinson, Kayvon Thibodeau. Like, how will you know if Aiden Hutchinson and Kayvon Thibodeau are awesome? And Trayvon Walker struggles, it's going to be highly criticized because most people believe that the Jaguars should take Aiden Hutchinson first.
I think that that's probably the bigger burning question. It's not how are they going to use all these pieces.
Can Trayvon Walker
just how is yeah, it's how is Trayvon Walker going to be? How is he going to look compared to his contemporaries?
And let's not forget that, you know, I mean, I think we talked about this in the podcast, but if not, I mean, like, I know this for a fact that Tripp Baalke was pushing for Trayvon Walker. Ownership was pushing for Aiden Hutchinson, and Doug Peterson was pushing for Ikem Ekwonu first overall. So, like, if Trevor Lawrence is under siege and Ekwonu is dominating in Carolina and Trayvon Walker is not producing, you know, that would be an interesting sort of way for things to unfold in terms of how the like is Tripp Baalke going to be worried about his job?
Yeah, it's kind of the conversation we were having last year when Ja'Marr Chase was going through all his drops during the preseason, and you're like, well, Joe Burrow just got the bag beat out of him. Why didn't you draft Penei Sewell? And so it's, you know, obviously that ended up working out. And
yeah, Ja'Marr Chase is great. Yeah, of course, yeah.
But let's say that continued and Burrow's getting beat up. Like, you know, that's the conversation that we're kind of previewing here. If all of a sudden, you know, Walker isn't doing anything and all of these other pieces below him are contributing in a way that the Jaguars could have utilized, well, then, yeah, you know, certainly, that's going to be questioned.
Absolutely. All right, let's move on to the Texans. God, this is just a thrilling division. What does Lovie Smith need to do to stick around? That is a rough out of the gates question, but it's probably not wrong. I don't know, man. Would they really fire a black head coach back to back years after single years?
That's a tough one. It's going to be a tough look. I mean, unless. I mean, I don't know. I mean, you know, who knows with that organization?
I'm not saying like that, just with all the focus on the minority hiring and improving.
For sure.
It would be – the NFL would not be pleased.
No, absolutely not. I mean, you know, clearly. And for me, we should combine that question and the second one on Cody's list, because I think that they're the same question.
Davis Mills need to do to prevent a QB search? That's fair.
I think those are the same.
If Davis Mills looks good, Lovie Smith's probably not going anywhere.
Exactly. And if, you know, if both of those guys can have somewhat success and can kind of figure out, and it feels like they have a thing, somewhat of a connection where it's like, all right, let's see what this looks like in year two of this. And Davis Mills is going into year three. Let's see how that looks. I think that these are one and the same. If all of a sudden Mills takes a nosedive and, you know, isn't as surprising, you're going to blame the head coach. They're going to move on, and it's all going to crumble around. But if all of a sudden they play well, you're going to say, all right, let's not screw around too much here.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's not like he's working with this like loaded cast. I mean, it's Brandon Cooks, Nico Collins, Philip Dorsett. That name.
And John Michi, unfortunately, missing the year because of leukemia. Year.
Yeah, that's a tough spot. Chris Conley.
Excuse me if I got that wrong.
Michi, I think that's and Brevin Jordan at tight end. I mean, yeah, with the Michi thing it's a you know, obviously mostly concerned about his personal well-being, but certainly a tough loss for a Texans team that thought he, you know, would be
second round pick.
I mean, I bet him to win rookie of the year. I mean,
yeah.
I mean, just because it was like, you know, this team's gonna be throwing a ton, you know, they're gonna be trailing. Well, you think they'd be throwing a ton. I guess Lovie Smith will throw a ton. I mean, you know, the point being is that, like, this is a team that should, in theory, be winging the ball around. And as such, you know, like, Davis Mills is going to get an opportunity to prove himself. And then
didn't add anybody. I mean, unless they're a sleeper team for Garoppolo, which I wouldn't necessarily rule out because of who's running the organization with Nick Caserio, who drafted or Patriots when they drafted Garoppolo in New England.
And that's, you know, like really maybe the only place where Jimmy G might be like guaranteed to play right away outside of Seattle.
You know, that's outside of that, Davis Mills has this job. So, I mean, if all of a sudden we're talking about Garoppolo in Seattle, then, you know, this is Davis Mills gets a full year to show the organization. Honestly, this is what they should do. I don't even think they should go after Garoppolo.
No, I agree. They should go with Wilson.
Let's see what this young kid has.
Yeah, for sure. And finally, what is happening? What is happening at running back? The Texans just aren't very good still. They have Marlon Mack, Rex Burkhead. They drafted Damian Pierce in the fourth round. So you have Dare Agunobalale, whose name I didn't even try today. Royce Freeman. It's not the sexiest running back room, but that's okay.
Yeah, no, I mean, it's fine. We'll see what Pierce does, I guess, is, you know, maybe he's the young guy that kind of comes up. Pierce is the most
interesting one just because he's not old.
I mean, Burkhead played well in a pass-catching role, but again, he's a guy that has struggled with staying on the field. Same thing, really, with Marlon Mack, too, right? I mean, like, it's not like we're talking about the most durable pieces either. I think you're talking about a rookie kind of coming in here with an opportunity to take the bulk of the carries. Like, I don't think Royce Freeman if everybody has an equal camp, I think you're giving the carries to Pierce to see if he can blossom a little bit more. And then using everybody else in kind of that secondary or pass catching role. So
it's like we were talking about with the quarterback. Like, I mean, what would be the point of not trying to get like the most out of these young guys?
Right. Like if all of it, like let's just play the game here a little bit. If like Pierce is a feature back or like a solid running back, Mills has a good year. Okay. Everybody's staying. Like you have young pieces. It's working. You're developing. You can make that case. Like, this is what we're talking about in terms of keeping everybody for 2023 and preventing coaching and quarterback changes. If you can show you can develop young pieces like Pierce out of the backfield and Mills looks like he's on the come up, well, then the coach is keeping his job and the rest goes kind of down the line.
Yeah, absolutely. Texans, I mean, like, you go out there, they compete.
Right.
I don't think they care that much about winning, because especially – if you lose and Mills isn't great, you know you've got something possibly coming up in the draft. Although I will say that Pete Prisco thinks that Mills is going to end up being the second best quarterback from that draft class.
He was very high on him, even going into the draft. He was one of his I forget what he called
better him. Better than. Yeah, he's better than team. They're better than the scouts think. Because I'm Pete Prisco. Yeah. All right, that'll do it. Good show. Great time, Sally. Awesome. As always, a pleasure chatting. That's EAFC South. Make sure you follow follow Sully at Tyler Sully. Tyler Sully on Twitter, right?
Yep.
There you go. And read his story. It'll be forthcoming on CBSSports.com, breaking down all the nuggets and news and notes from the Patriots training camp. Thanks, buddy. Always a pleasure. For Sully, I'm Brinson. See you guys later.
Okay, picture this. It's Friday afternoon when a thought hits you. I can spend another weekend doing the same old whatever, or I can hop into my all-new Hyundai Santa Fe and hit the road. With available H-Track all-wheel drive and three-row seating, my whole family can head deep into the wild. Conquer the weekend in the all-new Hyundai Santa Fe. Visit HyundaiUSA.com or call 562-314-4603 for more details. Hyundai, there's joy in every journey.